Aki, does Crydike ignore the fish of dreaming? Does he chase them or does he feed them? Jillian was asking if Crydike still functioned as a tool user. Was he lost to injury, drifting in an unconscious dream hunt? Or worse, was he dead? Somehow Jillian had immediately gone right to the heart of the matter. Aki was able to answer with blessed brevity. Chasing squid in deepest water. There was that sound again, a rapid clicking coming from not far away. Curse the necessity to keep his neural socket linked to the static of this line. The sounds were close enough to leave little doubt. Someone was hunting for him out here. All right, Aki. Next question. Does Hikahi calm all with her kinink rhythms? Does she echo herd obedience, or does she sing in absent silence? Dolphin sonar is a highly directional thing. He felt the edge of a lobe of a sonic beam pass just above him without hitting him broadside. Aki got down as close to the ocean floor as he could and made an effort to direct his own nervous clickings into the soft sand. He wanted to reach out with one of his harness arms and grab a rock or something for stability, but was afraid the tiny whirring of the motors would be heard. Absent silence fades the memory of Hikahi. Absent silence from Tisht and Suesi. He wished he, too, were absent this place and back in his quiet stateroom aboard Streaker. Okay, is their silence that of netted capture? Is it of orca fearful waiting? Or is it the silence of fishes feeding? Aki was about to answer, when, like one whose eyes were suddenly struck by a bright light, he was awash in a beam of pulsed sound, highly directional, somewhere from his left and above. No question, a dolphin up there was instantly aware of him. Takata Jim bites the cables. My own job is mine no longer. His fen relay, his lying songs. Aki was so agitated that some of that actually came out as sound rather than impulses sent to the monofilament. There was no use trying any longer for secrecy. He made ready to jettison the line and turned his melon toward the intruder. He fired off a sonar pulse strong enough, he hoped, to momentarily stun him. The echoes of his burst returned, giving him a vivid image. There was a thrashing sound as a very large dolphin swung aside out of his beam. Kathad John! Aki recognized the echo at once. Aki? What was that? Are you in fighting patterns? Break off if you have to. I'm coming home fast as I... Duty absolved, Aki popped the neural link free and rolled to one side. He acted none too soon. A blue-green laser bolt sizzled through the spot where he had been seconds before. So that's the way of it, he thought, as he dove into the canyon next to the ocean ridge. The hammerhead is out to get me and no politeness about it. He did a quick roll to his right and speared downward toward the shadows. Dolphins were known for a reluctance to kill anything that breathed air, but they were not a limited race. Even before uplift, humans had witnessed cases of fin murdering fin. In enabling cetaceans to be starfarers, men had also made them more efficient when they chose to kill. A lime-bright laser beam hissed a bare meter ahead of him. Aki clenched his jaw and dove through the streak of scalding bubbles. Another narrow, searing bolt sizzled between his pectoral fins. He whirled and dove for the long sonic shadow of a jagged outcrop of rock. Kathad John's laser rifle could kill at long range, while the welder torch on Aki's harness was, like all sidearm tools, of use only up close. Obviously, his only chances were in flight or in trickery. It was very dark down here. All of the red colors were gone. Only blue and green could could pass through from the day to illuminate a shadow-filled landscape. Aki took advantage of the rugged terrain and slipped between the sharp walls of a narrow rock cleft. There he stopped to wait and listen. The echoes he picked up through passive listening only told him that Kafa John was out there, somewhere, searching. Aki hoped his own rapid breathing wasn't as loud as it seemed. He sent a neural query to his harness. The microcomputer in its frame told him he had less than half an hour's air left in his breather. Aki's jaws ground together. He wanted Kafa John's long pectorals between his teeth, much as he knew he was no match for the big Stenos in size or strength. Aki had no way of knowing whether Kafa John was out here on his own or following orders from Takata Jim, but if there was some cabal of Stenos at work, he wouldn't put it past them to kill the helpless Krydike to secure their plan. Unthinkable as it was, they could even get it into their heads to harm Jillian if she weren't careful how she made her return to the ship. The mere thought of any Finn participating in such crimes made Aki feel sick. I've got to get back and help Makani defend Krydike until Jillian arrives. He slipped out of the cleft and swam a series of floor-hugging zigs and zags toward a small canyon to the southeast, in a direction away from Streaker and away from both Toshio's island and the Thenanin wreck. It was the direction most likely to be unwatched by Kafa John. He could hear the giant casting about for him. The powerful beams of sound were missing for now. There was a good chance he would get a head start. Still, it wasn't quite as tasty as the satisfaction he would have felt in surprising Kafa John with a snout ramming to his genitals. Jillian turned from the comm set to see anxiety on Toshio's face. It made him seem very young. Gone was the role of a rough, tough, worldly Mel. Toshio was an adolescent midshipman who had just found out his captain was crippled, and now his best friend might well be fighting for his life. He looked at her, hoping for reassurance that everything would be all right. Jillian took the youth's hand and pulled him into a hug. She held him, against his protests, until at last the tension went out of his shoulders, and he buried his face in her shoulder, holding her tightly. When he finally pulled away, Toshio didn't look at her, but turned away and wiped at one eye with the heel of his hand. "I'm going to want to take Kipiru with me," Jillian said. "Do you think you and Sao and Denny can spare him?" Toshio nodded. His voice was thick, but he soon had it under control. "Yes, sir. Sout may be a problem when I start giving him some of Kipiru's duties, but I've been watching the way you handle him. I can manage." "That's good. See if you can keep him off Denny's back. I'm sure you'll manage fine."
Jillian turned to her small poolside campsite to gather her gear. Toshio went to the water's edge and switched on the hydrophone amplifier that would signal the two dolphins that they were wanted. Sao and Kipiru had left an hour ago to await the evening foray of the Aborigines.
"I'll go back with you if you want, Jillian."
She shook her head as she gathered her notes and tools together.
"No, Toshio. Denny's work with the Kikui is damned important. You're the one who's got to keep her from burning down the forest with a spent match while she's preoccupied. Besides, I need you to maintain a pretense that I haven't left. You think you can do that for me?"
Jillian zipped shut her watertight satchel and started slipping out of her shirt and shorts. Toshio turned away at first and started to blush. Then he noticed that Jillian didn't seem to care that he looked.
"I might never see her again," he thought. "I wonder if she knows what she's doing for me."
"Yes, sir," he said.
Toshio's mouth felt dry.
"I'll act just as harassed and impatient as ever with Dr. Dart. And if Takata Jim asks for you, I'll tell him you're off somewhere sulking."
Jillian was holding her dry suit in front of her, preparing to step into it.